In this episode, we talk with Charlie Wooten, NAF4A, about recovery from Hurricane Michael in Panama City. Ham Nation is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 388 for February 6th, 2019. Hurricane Michael recovery with Charlie Wooten, NF4A. Good evening. Welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. I'm George, W5JDX. Bob Heil and Gordon West and Don Wilbanks are all AWOL tonight. I think Bob and Gordo are headed down to Orlando. That's going to be a fun time down there. And Don, he just decided he would take the night off since he could. And that's good. Need a night off every now and then. So we've got a special guest that'll be joining us tonight. It will be Charlie Wooten, NF4A, from iHeartMedia down in Panama City. Hi, Charlie.
I'm sure that Don is not here tonight because I'm here.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Will you
we
be
both
going
work
down
for
to
the
Orlando?
Same company? Yeah, I'm going down on Friday. Actually, I'm going down tomorrow night and be there on Friday.
Yeah, I sure wanted to go this year, but I'm not going to be able to make it. But we'll be back with Charlie in just a moment here because we've got some catching up to do. Also tonight, we've got Dale with Viewer Videos. Hi, Dale.
Hi, George. How you doing? Got a couple of good videos tonight. Some really nice pictures, a few more pet pictures. Should be a good segment for the second video segment here on Ham Nation, George.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that. And, of course, we've got the chat room lady, Amanda, with us tonight. And, Amanda, how are things going out in Colorado right now? It's in the 70s here today.
Oh, you know, it's not. We're now in the frigid. We're where Colorado should be. We're at about 20 degrees tonight. So a lot of places up north getting some snow and a lot of car accidents out there. So everyone be safe. But I hope the rest of the country has defrosted since that polar vortex. So, but stay tuned. Send me your questions on the chat room here and we'll get them sent over to our host tonight. Look forward to talking to you all later.
Okay. Well, we'll be back in a little bit with Amanda later in the show, so send her your questions there. We'd like to hear what's on your mind. A couple of things we want to mention. You can listen to Ham Nation live on WTWW at 5085, and I think that's the only frequency we got here. I can't see it because my browser window is not big enough. 5085, 100 kilowatts, and 15810. Email your reports to WTWW. Let them know how well you're receiving them. Email at WTWW.us and give them a signal report. And, you know, this is the time of year that TWIT always does a survey to see what people like about shows and what they don't like and just get general feedback from the audience. Would like you to participate in that. You just go to twit.to/survey19, twit.to/survey19, and fill in the blanks there, check off the marks, and let the folks at TWIT know what you think about your shows and a little bit about you. It helps us better tailor the shows to the people who are watching. Okay, as I mentioned earlier tonight, we said hello to Charlie, NF4A, down in Panama City. Charlie was with us a few months back, and we were talking about some hurricane recovery up a little further north. We didn't really know what was about to happen to you just immediately after that. Rough time in Panama City?
Yeah, it was a rough time, to say the least. We had... everybody calls it a category 4.9. That's what it really was. It was, should have been classified as a category 5, but that's a political thing. Because when you go to category 5, the deductibles go away on insurance in Florida. And, I think there's some, that's my personal opinion, that there's a little bit of political thing going on there to keep it at a category 4 so that that doesn't happen.
Wow. I tell you, that was really a tough looking storm. Everything I saw immediately after there, and we were thinking about all you guys down there. I guess folks are still kind of digging out from it, but they're going to do that down in Florida, aren't they? People just deal with it as it comes, and it's a shame, but I guess every so many years you can expect something like this.
Yeah, it's not the same here yet. There many people who have dial-up type telephones don't have those yet. On regular, like an AT&T wired telephone, the cables were destroyed. There were 7,000 poles in Panama City were destroyed. They had to be replaced, and there was all kinds of fiber, cable TV, telephone, of course, power. And these poles were just laying down straight across the road. I was blocked in from leaving the iHeart studios for a day and a half until the National Guard came through one night about 10 o'clock and took a chainsaw to the power poles and made a one lane entrance where you could go between the cut sections of the power pole and had where you could have one lane of traffic. Interesting to say the least. And by the way, I wanted to say something. You mentioned WTWW. Holly just sent out a message on Facebook about 30 or 45 minutes ago that they had lost power at the transmitter site, and they didn't expect to have it back on to about 10:30 tonight. So I thought I'd pass that along to you. But we've got some pictures here, and as I told you earlier today, I didn't have a lot of time today. I was going to give you an order to put these in, so we may jump around quite a bit. But this is the outdoor sign at the iHeart office in Panama City. We have 6 radio stations, 5 FM and 1 AM. And that sign is indicative of the whole situation. That across the street, you see the fence. That's a cemetery that's across the street, and that place was just demolished. And until a week ago, they are finally getting to going into the cemetery, and they're having to cut the pine trees very carefully to keep from disturbing headstones and whatnot. But it's a real mess. Trees, pine trees. We have a lot of pine trees down here in the Florida Panhandle, and pine trees are snapping off 20 and 30 feet above the ground, and falling on power lines, on houses, on everything here. And they're having to come along and, you know, trim all these trees and get them where everything can get back to some semblance of normal. And we can go on. This is my north tower of my 3-tower directional array. And we'll talk about it a little bit later in another set of pictures. That had a 4-bay FM antenna on it, George. It was a broadband antenna for a backup site for my FMs. And
now this is on 590, right?
So yeah, on 590. Yeah, it was a 300 foot tower. We had 3 300 foot towers, and I think there were 65 degrees for those who understand what that means. But at any rate, so right now we're operating off a long wire, and we've got some pictures, and perhaps, I don't know if you've got the video there to that sent. This is our reception area as it was being cleaned up, the whole front north part of the building. Luckily, our studios are on the south half of the building, and we were on the side of the storm that we got the north wind from the eye. The eye went through the east side of Panama City and into Gulf County, and we got the north side. So the north winds that took did a lot of damage to our building We've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage, including we're just in the process now of getting a new roof. This is my engine. This is the company truck I am trying to get into one of my transmitter sites here. And we had to hack our way into it, literally, to get into the site. As you pointed out last week in your videos, if we can go back to that right there. Last week, roads to transmitter sites are not always blacktop, no. Are they, George?
No, not at all. You always look forward to having to go down the road. Yep. After a storm, especially. Wow.
Yeah. But we were having to pull pine trees out of the way. This is our gasoline. Gasoline was in the tank behind there. And then the plastic tank there had diesel fuel in it to where we could take it and take it to our transmitter sites. We had a contractor that came in and brought the gasoline and the diesel, and that generator sitting there actually never got used. It was there as a backup to our permanently mounted generator. But we had two generators on site that were portable that we could pull to a transmitter site or to the studio, around back to the studio, if we had to had a failure. But Cummins Onan generators are the thing. They work. I wouldn't have anything else but a Cummins Onan. We ran those things in some cases for 3.5 weeks. One of my transmitter sites did not have power for 3.5 weeks, and we were on a priority list. So you can imagine how that worked out. We took one of them off the air. Each one of the generators we took off the air at midnight at different nights, and we serviced them and then brought them back home. We always told the people, "Now we'll be back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back, but we've got to take the generator off and service it." And luckily, at my studio, I have a huge UPS, 18 kV UPS, and the 18 kVA UPS was able to keep our whole system up while we stopped the generator. Pump the oil out, put new oil in, put new filters on, put new fuel filter on and water separator and crank it back up. So that we didn't have that problem at the studio. Here is where our studio tower was. And you can see our studio tower over in the background. That was a 160-foot Rhone SSV. And it held all my microwave and MARTI antennas, RPU antennas for pickup. For my studio to transmitter links and other broadcasts. And here they're excavating out the foundation so that we can bring in the new, which is going to be a monopole, by the way. It's going to be a bear of a monopole, George. It's going to hold two 10-foot dishes, a 6-foot dish, a DB224, a DB420, and some, and two cell sites. And Dish TV has their local channel pickup on this thing. So it's going to be a bear of a pole when they put it up, and it's supposed to be put up in the next, 30 to 60 days, I'm guessing.
Wow. That, and with that being, all your STLs on there, that took all the stations off at once, didn't it?
No, it didn't.
Oh, it didn't?
We have T1s going to our transmitter site. To our WPAP and Sunny 98 transmitter site is on fiber, and it's underground fiber, AT&T fiber. Thank God for AT&T underground fiber, and we were able to stay on the air on that station. We were able to switch over to a satellite feed at our other FMs by going to those sites and patching in a satellite feed, which iHeart has. After Hurricane Katrina, we put in what's called the SAT-L, which is a KU band IP-based radio and with the barracks boxes, which are codecs for sending and receiving audio. And so we were able to use those to feed those transmitter sites with audio. And one interesting aside there, iHeart brought in a helicopter from Louisiana who picked up Mike Hagan's WA4ZGI, W4ZGI. No, WA4ZGI, his dad's W4ZGI, and flew him to the 94.5 site because it was unreachable by vehicle because of trees and debris. They landed about 200 yards from the tower and walked in, and we knew what kind of cable we needed. We made that cable up before we left and plugged in the SAT-L receiver straight into the audio processor, and that one was back on the air. This is tower two of our AM directional array. And down at the far end, you can't see it. That cable tray goes on down to tower three, and it's down as well. These were, again, 300-foot towers there. You can see a little bit of tower three there leaning over, but it's obviously unusable. And the tuning unit house at the base of that tower is nowhere to be found.
And that's really what you hate to see at an AM site is losing your towers and your tuning houses and all. I mean, that's just almost like a complete rebuild.
Yeah, this is tower two. And believe it or not, it was made out of block. The tuning house was made out of block. And this is the only one that survived as far as the tuning house is concerned. Like I said, all three towers here. This is right after the storm had passed, or, you know, where the storm had gotten, where the winds had gotten down to be a safe to be outdoors. I mean, it was, not safe to be outdoors, to say the least. But after they were down to 45 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, we were out. This is actually taken looking from the generator, looking back toward the tower. The tower fell to the south, and as you can see, it hit our next door neighbor's building and did a little damage there. That's all been repaired now. But that's the tower, the way it went over, and it went down in a southerly direction. This is on the Bay Line Railroad on US 231. This was on the way back from one of my transmitter sites one day. I had to take a picture of this. These are boxcars that were blown over by the storm. And wow. There were hundreds of boxcars in the switchyard and on this sidetrack that were blown over to the side.
That's some kind of storm.
Yeah. This is a Comrex unit we set up using IP audio to set up at the EOC so that we could get information from the people at the EOC. Luckily, connectivity, IP connectivity with the EOC. And this is Ruth Corley with the Sheriff's Department doing a report back to our studios. And of course, using the Comrex access, you can hear, she could hear the people back at the studio, and she could also talk. So it was like, and it sounded just like she was in the studio. It was really, really worked out well.
Wow.
I took this picture on the way to the 94.5 transmitter site. This was probably 3 or 4 days after the storm. There's a truck pulled up on the top of this bridge that goes over the Intercoastal Waterway, probably up 70 feet. And they brought in a cow, a cell site on wheels, and the cellular company set it up right on the top of the bridge, trying to get cell coverage into Port St. Joe, which was really hard hit down in Gulf County. But that's just the kind of things that you see when something like this happens. I thought it was really a great idea. Of course, it's self-contained, you know, with a generator, and it connects back to the switch through satellite. So this was a way to get cell service going again. And this where you're seeing the top of that bridge there is like 70 feet off the ground. So they probably got another 30 feet there. So they're probably 100 feet above terrain there. And our terrain down there is pretty flat. So that's like having a 100-foot tower with an antenna on it.
Yeah.
This was a happy day. This was the day that the power company finally got the lines back up, and we were finally going to get studio power back. This was after about 10 days, and we're only two blocks from a major substation. So that tells you, in fact, less than two blocks from the substation, about a block and a half. There's a railroad track and a street and a lot separates us from the substation. So you can imagine what kind of problems they had, not only the distribution lines to rebuild, but they had the transmission lines, the big high voltage transmission lines that they had to rebuild as well. And here we go. This is the Yonan transfer switch. And of course, we're still on generator. And of course, that light came on showing us that we have commercial power available. And this was before it made the switch over to the shore power, which that was a wonderful day, believe me, when we finally had power. Now, our generator was a 200 kW generator, and we had air conditioning. We had all of our lights. We didn't have to cut anything off. We could make coffee. We could do whatever we wanted to do. This is the tuning house in Tower 1 at our AM site. The roof is gone. There is 50 feet of tower standing. You can see it there in the kind of in the middle top of the picture. And yep, we'll show you in a few minutes what we did to utilize that 50 feet. As you can see it right at the guy point, it stayed up. And that's Pyrod Tower. Pyrod, Tim K3LR, all of his towers at his contest station are Pyrod. They make a great tower. And we utilize, believe it or not, that's the vertical. We use that vertical part of that tower after we cut away the part that fell, that's fallen to the ground. We use that and we made an inverted L. And if Bob was on here, he would appreciate that, being probably a 160 meter guy. That we had an inverted L for 590 kilohertz.
Wow. How long was the horizontal?
The horizontal is 375 feet long. We put in two poles. We put in one pole with that's the back of our transmitter building at our AM site. We put in two poles. We put in a pole just to be a center support, and then we put in the back pole with a backstay on it for the end of the wire, and of course insulators and everything. We put a insulator out of the top of the pole for the center support, and then at the back we had a big insulator, high voltage insulator, because the voltage at the end of that wire, we don't know what it is, but we know it's pretty doggone high, on the antenna and the frequency and the antenna resistance and everything. By the way, the resistance was about, I think it was about 15 ohms or something like that, when we had to match to. This is at Tower 2. This is just another shot showing the destruction there. And there's the base of Tower 2, what's left of it. Just go ahead and flip through these pretty quickly. This is at my FM site for WPAP and Sunny 98, our two main stations. As you can see, you're probably familiar with the Intraplex T1. That's using a T1 line you buy from the phone company. It's a 1.544 megabit data circuit, and that stayed up all during the storm. And if you look down in go back just for a second on that one slide. If you'll notice right at the very bottom of the picture, you see there's a Mosley STL there, and you see the red light showing there's no signal on the STL. That's our STL brings in both the audios for the both stations, and you can see the two audio cards in there for the two stations, left and right, left on the top, right on the bottom. And we were putting that over the air on the STL, but that T1 saved our butt, keeping the two main set. Those were the two 100,000 watt stations that are up 1100 feet. So they were covering the whole affected area.
Yeah.
And here you see a crane taking down the tower, taking it down a piece. They'd take down a slice at a time. They would had a man basket on another crane. They would go up and slice off 20 or 30 feet and set it to the ground, then get the rest of it. We had a problem with our Sunny 98 antenna, and it's a Jampro, George, and right where the little V's hook onto driven element, the driven elements on the base, all of those wells were cracked because of the winds and the vibration. We now have a new antenna. It was just delivered day before yesterday, and we'll be putting it up soon. But until then, I have to keep nitrogen up there. And rather than use this bottles of nitrogen gas, I've got these big stainless steel canisters of liquid nitrogen, and we get the gas off the top of them. And one of these canisters is equal to 23 of those regular canisters of gas.
So do you do anything special to get the gas off the top of it, or you just hook into it?
There's actually a port there to get gas off of.
Okay.
There are about three or four ports on the top of this tank. You can get liquid off of some and different things, but that one is strictly for gas, and that's just what's off the top of the liquid. And that's what's feeding the two transmission lines. And we had to do that to keep the antenna dry. And plus, I've got the transmitter cut back to about 75% because just want to be careful, you know.
Oh, yeah.
This is at the 99.3 site. This was a site that did not have power for the longest time, about 3.5 weeks. And this is the day that they finally got the power on at the 99.3 site. And it takes off and goes off to the right-hand side of the screen there to the transmitter site, which is about a quarter mile down through the woods. And you can see that used to be a very thick, fine forest behind there. And you can see what's left of it. And you notice the trees are either leaning or they're broken off.
Hmm.
And the broken pole there. This is right before the hurricane. We have these panels that are pre-cut, pre-numbered for every window in the building. And this is the guys installing those panels to get ready for the storm. And they saved our butt because we would have had a lot of problems in the building if we hadn't have done this. But these were from previous storms. We had these things stacked up in the back. And we have a contractor who comes in. When we have storms, we've had to put them up before and nothing's happened. But this time it paid off because we didn't have any breakage. And this was strictly for the areas where there would be people, like, in offices and in studios. Right here, this particular is the WPAP studios that he's putting the panels on here. Mm-hmm. It was quite an adventure. I don't know. I say that as an adventure, but I was really busy for about 3 or 4 weeks, putting in 80 and 90 hours every week. It was everything from making sure that the generators were fueled and everything was working, and coordinate with the phone company to make sure our T1 stayed up, and having to do. I had some help. I want to make sure I say this. I had help, and that from other iHeart engineers who came in from Montgomery, Mobile, Atlanta, Miami. I'm going to forget somebody. Sure as hell, Orlando or Tampa. We had several that came in on shifts that would come in one or two at a time, until things got stabilized. And so that there was actually, we had an engineer at the station 24/7 in case something was to happen. They were there 24/7. We had the corporate brought in two motorhomes for them to stay in. We had, like I said, we had those extra generators. The motorhomes just left yesterday, going back to where they're warehouse. They're not rental units. They actually belong to iHeart. They're for emergencies like this.
Wow, and you're still not fully recovered from it. Your personal property, though, you didn't get it too bad, did you?
We have about $20,000 to $25,000 worth of damage in our house, mainly windows, doors. We've got some carpet that had to be pulled out because it was wet. We had our fence, our privacy fence all around the property had to be replaced. It just got replaced. Luckily, I'd had a new roof put in April, and the roof survived. That was the one thing. And the trees that fell didn't fall on the house. I was lucky there. My ham antenna is gone completely. And I had, I had a 80-foot tower with big HF array. I had wire antennas, and all of that's gone. But as soon as deer season is over, I'll be looking at that and getting that back in shape.
Boy, I guess you just barely made deer season. You're still not fully recovered at the stations there, but
no, normally would have hunted a lot more this year, but and under normal circumstances, but I've had to cut that back quite a bit.
Wow. Well, so you still got the FM antenna to put up, but at least you've got it there now. And what else? Is everything else about back in shape besides minor repairs? Well, you still got to, I guess, do the AM from the ground up.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out what we're going to do with the AM. That's being handled by people above my pay grade. That's all I'll say about that. But we'll do something. We'll do something. I'm sure the whole community is really, really torn apart right now. It's really not back at any semblance of normal here. And one of the problems, George, was that we had the hurricane and Hurricane Michael, and we had all of the press come in, and there was coverage, and nightly news was here live, and all the guys from the Weather Channel were here. And then they had the fires in California. And so the nightly news and everybody went to California for the fire, and they forgot all about us down here. And it has really, really shown up in the way people are donating to things, you know, like to the Red Cross or to the whatever. There are several agencies that are dealing with Hurricane Michael here that we've been forgotten, to be quite frank about it. Been a lot of local press and state press about it that we haven't been remembered, or we've just been forgotten. But mainly, and I'm not trying to belittle the California fires. Don't take it that way. But it was just the timing of it. It really caused things to not be like they would normally be. I think they said typical donations to this type of disaster were down about 40% to 50% for Hurricane Michael because of the way it happened, the timing of it happened in relation to the California fires.
Well, I think some of the national press needs to come back down there and take a look and see, what's left to be done, because that's not something that you can recover from right away. It's going to take a lot of money and a lot of time. And
yeah, I had a video, and I don't know if you got it off of Dropbox or not. It was a video of the AM inverted L. This is it. Here we go. It goes up to there where the tower is, and then it goes out. And then we've got a center pole. There's the center pole, and it goes on to the other pole. And that's our AM inverted L. It works pretty doggone good. I'm surprised. We're running about 600 watts into it, and it does quite well.
So what was your normal daytime power on that?
Our 590 is a unique station. We were 1.7 kW non-directional on tower 2 during the day. At night, we were 2.5 kW directional.
Wow.
And it wasn't an STA. It wasn't an STA. It was an actual license, and it was due to Cuban interference.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, we got a translator here because of Cuban interference. That was the only thing they could do on that. But well, Charlie, we appreciate you being with us tonight and kind of bringing us up to date. And praying for all you guys down there still recovering from this. And so many people lost everything. It's
There were a lot of people who lost everything, literally. And we had one group of broadcasters here, Powell Broadcasting. They shut the doors, turned everything off, and left town. They didn't even try to come back on the air. As a matter of fact, one of the stations came back on the air automatically when the power came on, and the engineer was told to go turn it off. And so those stations have now been sold, and I think they'll be coming back on the air. But that was just, you know, one particular licensee that just says, screw it, I'm gone, I'm out of here. And they just left. That's all I got to say about that.
it's very expensive to run broadcast stations. It's not a license to print money like it was decades ago. I mean, you know, it's a tough business these days. And when you got adversities like that, it's really tough to recover from them. And, you know, we followed your stories on Facebook there as things went through. And right at the first, there was almost nothing from you. I knew that you were super busy down there. And then you started posting a little bit of stuff along, because you don't have time to post on social media or take photos. You know, when you're going through something like this, I knew things were starting to get a little bit better when I saw you start talking about deer hunting, and then you started posting pictures of supper again.
Yep. You know, we got our I'm the president of a hunting club that has 15,000 acres of land, and we had a camp house, or a cookhouse, we called it, where we had recliners, we had a flat screen TV, we had a full kitchen, and that thing was completely flattened. And it changed our whole dynamic of our hunt club this year, because we didn't have the social thing going on after the hunt during the day, because we would camp up there. Luckily, my camp made it through the hurricane without any problem. There were trees that laid down on the top of my camp, but they didn't penetrate the roof, and that was amazing compared to some of the camps that were at our hunting camp that were completely smashed and destroyed.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing part of the story with us there tonight, Charlie. And stick around, because we'll come back with you and some questions here from the chat room shortly. But right now, let's get a roundup from Don, who wouldn't show his face on the same show with you here tonight, but he's got the news for us.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2153, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 6, 2019. If you weren't in Arizona this year at the 22nd Annual Quartz Fest, you missed a chance to set a record, and you missed a whole lot more.
The 22nd annual gathering had a total of 1,043 attendees, beating last year's record by 191, according to organizer Kristen Weed, KR1SS. The camping and educational extravaganza kicked off on the 20th of January in Arizona's Sonoran Desert, creating an off-the-grid community of hams and ham friends for 1 week. There were potluck dinners, giveaways, seminars, previews of new products, workshops, campfires, and special event station W7Q. That station made more than 500 contacts by the time the week was through. To top it off, Mother Nature offered a total lunar eclipse on Sunday, January 20th, and the Desert Amateur Radio Network offered an on-air discussion about the phenomenon. So how devoted are Quartz Fest attendees anyway? So much so, said Chris, that one ham actually traveled west to this RV campground all the way from Maine. Later, a number of happy campers posted on social media that they were already thinking of ordering t-shirts for Quartz Fest 2020. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
No ham is an island, but working or even activating a station on an island can become addictive.
The U.S. Islands Awards Program is celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. Jay Chamberlain, NS4J, explains what the program is all about.
The U.S. Islands Awards Program started back there in 1994 by John KL7JR. He really felt that there was a program that could be sustained in the U.S. Quite a bit different than IOTA. Of course, IOTA is, you know, much larger scale. He really wanted to start a program in the U.S. that included lake islands and river islands and sea or shore islands.
Specifically, in celebration of 25 years of the program, a special award is available only for this year.
For 2019, we decided to do a year-long activity. So a chaser can work and confirm 25 islands. A little more difficult, an operator can activate 25 islands. We'll have a special award for that.
To find these operations, look for spots on DX Summit for USI. And as Jim says, this program can become habit-forming. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
Finally this week, Newsline anchor Paul Brown, WD9GCO, has the story of a new gift to a local library.
The latest addition to the collection inside the Briggs Lawrence County Public Library in Ironton, Ohio, is a limited edition 6-volume box set hot off the press. The title? The 2019 Amateur Radio Relay League Handbook. This was a gift given recently to the library by the Southern Ohio Amateur Radio Association and presented by club president James Rowe, N8TVO, and Eddie Jenkins, N8URU. The club made the donation during a program members gave at the library last month, providing a general overview of ham radio's capabilities, from local communications to contact with outer space. The library's director, Joe Jenkins, said that not only was he very pleased with these newest library books, but he was eager to have club members return in the summer. That's when the youngsters in the summer reading program are hoping to contact one of the astronauts on board the International Space Station using, what else? Amateur radio.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Andy Morrison, K9AWM, Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
The space weather may be quieting down, but the quiet won't last. We have another solar storm on the way. Will it affect you? That story and more in the shorty this week. Space weather this week has definitely calmed down compared to last week. We're still dealing with the influence of this remnant coronal hole that's been rotating through the Earth's strike zone. Most of it has been kind of little pockets of fast solar wind, but we're about to get a really well-formed part of this coronal hole rotating into the Earth's strike zone. That's going to send us some more fast wind, and it could easily bump us back up to storm conditions. So aurora photographers, especially you guys at high latitudes, you're going to continue the aurora love this week. So make sure you keep sending in those field reports. Now, amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you guys are also in the luck because we do have a bright region that is rotating through the Earth-facing disk right now. It has bumped up the solar flux and is keeping it at the hairy edge of low for marginal radio propagation. So this is good news because this will continue easily through the next week. And then we have another region on the sun's backside. So as this one rotates out of view, another one will rotate in view, and it should keep that radio propagation looking pretty good. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that small pocket of fast solar wind from that well-formed region of a coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone here in the next couple days. Now, at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active conditions with up to about a 30% chance of a major storm. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting, well, kind of unsettled to active conditions with up to about a 10% chance of a minor storm. But these conditions will be very fleeting at mid-latitudes. That's because, you know, we're basically at the solar minimum sun right now, and so these storms just aren't as strong as they used to be just a year or so ago. So we'll have to kind of deal with it, and I hope we get some aurora at mid-latitudes, but you're going to have to stay on your toes. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, although we do have a bright region on the Earth-facing sun right now, it is not strong enough to be classified as a sunspot, so the sun does remain spotless right now. We have no risk for big flares or radio blackouts, and this should make you GPS users on Earth's day side very happy. The one nice thing is that it is boosting the solar flux up into the marginal range for radio propagation. We are holding on to the low 70s here. Looks like toward the end of the week, we could taper off and dip into the poor range for just a couple days, but no fear. We do have another region that's going to be rotating into Earth view in about a week, and that should bump the radio propagation back up into the marginal range. Now, because we are in a solar minimum sun, we do have more cosmic ray penetration than we normally would have. So you frequent flyers, and this includes you air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are in the marginal range for radiation dose, and this does include new prenatal passengers, so please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week has definitely calmed down compared to last week, but we do still get another chance for a solar storm here over the next couple days, so your aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes, make sure your batteries are charged. Now, amateur radio operators and emergency responders, well, on the day side, you guys are kind of struggling with marginal radio propagation, but make sure you take advantage of the auroral propagation that'll happen during the solar storm on Earth's night side. Now, for GPS users, well, you guys should be loving life both on the day side and at low latitudes. Your reception should be fantastic here over the next couple days. But underneath aurora or anywhere you can see it, and also near the dawn dust terminators, things could get a little glitchy until the solar storm calms down. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. ICOM's newest SDR transceiver, the IC9700, is coming soon. This new radio is bringing direct sampling to the UHF-VHF weak signal world. The IC9700 all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features, such as dedicated amateur satellite operation, color touchscreen, built-in D-Star capability, RF direct sampling on 2 meters and 70 centimeter bands, dual independent receivers capable of full duplex operation as well as dual watch, 100 watts maximum output power on 2 meters, 75 watts max on 70 centimeters, and 10 watts max on 1.2 gigahertz. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
Attention all hams!
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fest they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at icomamerica.com/hams.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats and whatever else Jesse can stuff in the box there. And you'll automatically be entered in the grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for January, the winner of that new radio was William J. WW5G. William won the ICOM IC2738 dual band, dual watch mobile rig, a great analog dual band radio with dual band, dual watch, large LCD, 50 watts on VHF, UHF, and a lot more. But you need to register again because for February, we've got another radio that's going to be the ID4100A. Entry-level D-Star mobile with big rig features, dual band, one band at a time, analog, and D-Star. It has a new upgraded user interface, making D-Star much more user-friendly. Built-in GPS is included. It does DV fast data mode. It's got the near repeater search function, a micro SD card slot for voice and data storage, and there's an optional U2 137 Bluetooth board available, and Android and iOS apps. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and after each episode and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And last week, I asked you a question in the smoke and solder contest, which was more like the Tales from the Transmitter Site contest. When troubleshooting electronic equipment, what is the first thing you should check? Well, I didn't quite get the answer I was looking for. As a matter of fact, nobody said exactly what I was looking for, so maybe I was wrong. But it was split 50-50. About half of the people said, make sure that the power is off. And the other half said, make sure that the power is on. What I was actually looking for is the first thing you would check is the power supply. Thinking a little bit beyond if the power is on or off, but checking the supply in there itself. Well, so nobody said that. So like I say, maybe I was wrong, but that's what I was taught in college. So we did choose a winner, though. It's Ron Rice, KN4US. And Ron said the first thing you should always check is whether or not there is power. So, good answer there, Ron. You just split it right down the middle. One way or the other, you want to know if the power is there or if it's not. You're going to win the MFJ 270 Guardian Angel Surge Suppressor. It's a great little gas block type surge suppressor. Put in line on your coax and connect a ground to it, and it helps keep surges from damaging your sensitive radio gear. There's a couple of different models of these available, either with a PL259, and I believe there is also another one with a type-N connector. They're good from DC to 100 megahertz, and, I've used one of these on my dual-band rig for years and haven't had a lightning strike on it since. That doesn't mean this scared it away, but it certainly doesn't help. It certainly doesn't hurt to put a little extra protection in there. And these gas block suppressors, they only break down if the voltage gets high enough, so it's not going to interfere with your regular transmission and reception. So next week, I've got another question here. And this, I usually try to ask the questions in context with whatever we talked about. But we're going to skip what I was going to talk about tonight because we got so much information there from Charlie. We got a lot more to go yet tonight. But you may can guess what I was going to talk about because the question is, what is another name for a volt ohm meter, a VOM? What's another name for a volt ohm meter? If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you could win a copy of Gary Drash, K9DJT's Ham Radio is Alive and Well, a great book on his rediscovery of amateur radio after being out for a number of years, and all the exciting modes that we've got here today. So if you're new to ham radio, if you've been a ham for a long time, or if you're thinking about coming back in, any of those reasons is a good reason to check out Gary's book, Ham Radio is Alive and Well. And another thing I want to mention, Randy has been working on another Show Us Your Project video that we hope to have soon. And if you'd like to submit some photos and descriptions of what you've been working on, no videos, just photos, then send them to Randy at k7age@outlook.com. Let him know what you've been building, soldering, wrenching, or drilling. And you could be included in the next Show Us Your Project segment. And right now, speaking of showing us stuff, here's Dale.
Okay, George, thank you very much. It's cold in Kansas, about 22 degrees here, so we're going to warm things up with a couple of good videos. I think you'll like them. We'll kick things off with a video for the fans of legacy radios. Dan, N9LVS, interviewed Bill. He's W9MXQ, keeper of the hardware history. Let's watch.
This is Dan, N9LVS. I'm here today on Skype with Bill, W9MXQ, and he's got a lot of old vintage radio equipment he wants to show us. Bill, how's it going today?
Pretty good, Dan. Thanks a lot for the call. Kind of interesting stuff here to show you today.
Okay, what do we got here?
Okay, this is a 3-series Collins S-Line 32S3 75S3B receiver and the accessories and the 3001 linear amplifier and that kind of like Heathkit keyer down there in the corner, kind of a contrast in colors. And there's the mating transceiver from the S-Line series, the KWM-2A and the 312B5 console, which is kind of hard to find. And there's that same 3001 linear amplifier and the same Heathkit keyer again. This is the Collins Gold Dust Twins, minus the speaker. I've never been able to find one that I thought was in good shape. That's the 75A4 receiver and the KWS-1 transmitter. You can see the transmitter's power supply over to the left, and there's an Ameritron tuner there and a D104 microphone. This is a very nice TR7, and you can see the external VFO, the RV7 next to it. SP75 speech processor up on top of the VFO. On top of the radio is the speaker, the MS7, the wattmeter WH7. Over to the left is a MN2700 antenna tuner, and over to the right is the L7 linear amplifier. Hey, there is actually Hallicrafter's second transceiver for sideband. They did make one called the FPM200, which back in the 50s was extremely way ahead of its time. Very few of those were made, so I always refer to this as the first. This is the SR150 transceiver. This is the Hallicrafter's SX117 receiver, HT44 transmitter, matching power supply for the transmitter and also speaker for the receiver. Okay, just wanted to throw this in here. One of my favorite radios, the good old Hallicrafter's SX100, those classic dual half-moon dials. They're just nothing quite like them. This is the Heathkit SB101. The SB100 was the original one, but this one is one model later. 80 through 10 meter transceiver, wonderful radio. Okay, now you're moving over to one of my pride and joy stations. This is a complete national station from around 1969. I duplicated an ad that was in CQ magazine back then. I believe the title of the ad was something like Live a Little, and they showed this entire set. National also, slightly later, introduced a lower cost transceiver. This is the NCX200, also referred to as the National 200, as you see on the label there, but they were referred to both in all of their literature. This is a National SW3. And along with what is even rarer, that cherry wood box that held the plug-in coils. And this is another example from National back in the day. This is a pre-war HROM, and by pre-war, I mean World War II. Models such as this were at Bletchley Park in the United Kingdom when they were breaking the Enigma code that the Germans had. This is a Swan 350C, 550-watt transceiver. I had one of these back in the 70s. That's a Swan 500CX, again, 550 watts PEP, but had such niceties as selectable sideband and a CW monitor. There's a different Turner microphone. I've been licensed since 1964, originally as WA9MXQ. And that's when I got that Hallicrafter set and actually used it as my main station for quite some time. I refer to W9MXQ as the home for wayward ham gear. And that's it.
Okay,
7-3.
Okay, well, Dan, thank you very much for putting that together. And Bill, what a collection of fantastic radios. We had a Swan 240 back in the early 60s or late 50s, and that was a fantastic radio. Looked just like the ones you had there in the picture, almost. Not quite as much power. Well, it's time to check out some of the photos you've been sending in here. We've received a few since the last video segment. And we'll start off with a photo that Bob sent me last week. It's not a ham shack. Rather, it's Dave Joseph, the PA announcer for the LA Kings. He uses the same microphone many hams use. That's the Heil PR40. Well, next, a nice photo of Randy, K7AGE. He's relaxing out on the deck next to the RV at Corkfest. And breaking news now, after we sent in our photos this afternoon, we received a couple of more from Randy. On the trip to Corkfest, or the trip back, he had a chance to operate from the Titan Missile Museum. That's in Green Valley, Arizona. They have an old HF discone antenna left over from the days of the Cold War. And they let hams park next to it, hook up their coax, and go on the air. Randy worked 24 stations on 20 meters. He'll have a video of this when he returns. I'm sure hoping he can let us show us here on the video segment. That would be fantastic on February 27th. Well, D-N6-D-E-E sent Bob a note saying, I love my pink PR-22. Here she's on the air in the shack. D isn't the only one there to love the pink microphone. Here's her pug. That's Quatsy. He's taking a turn at the mic. Jared M3XYP over in London in England sent a picture of his grandchild using a Heil microphone. Sent that to Bob. Bob passed it along for us here on the video segment. And finally, here's a photo of Linus the cat sent in by Jason W1ASP out in Manchester, New Hampshire. That's Mike Echo Oscar Whiskey QSL. Well, that's it for the photo watch, though. Remember, send your shack photos to Ham Nation Videos at TWIT.TV, and we'll get them on Ham Nation for you. Well, finally, this evening, a short, educational, and thought-provoking video. There are many misconceptions out in the ham community about antenna tuners. And Jim, W9JUG, on his YouTube channel, set out to set the record straight. Here's Jim.
Welcome to part two of tuner operation. Using an antenna analyzer, I have previously tuned the antenna to a frequency of 29.600 megahertz. In looking at the LG2 tuner, notice that there are two LED bar graphs. One measures power and the other measures SWR. When I key the transmitter, as I will do now, you see the bar graph, top bar graph, reads 20 watts, but the SWR bar graph is not lit because it is a 1-to-1 standing wave ratio. The tuner is in the bypass mode, which connects the antenna directly to the transmitter and not through the tuner. When I change the frequency to 28.014, the SWR reads about 3-to-1. Okay, on this frequency. I have connected an external SWR meter between the antenna and the tuner. Notice that the SWR on the external meter reads approximately 3-to-1. Okay. We will now place the tuner in the tuner function and key the transmitter and see what the SWR is. Okay? The SWR now is 1-to-1. Okay? That's what the transmitter is seeing. But let's look at the external SWR meter. And we see that it is approximately 3-to-1. It did not change. So this proves that using the tuner does not change the SWR at the antenna, but does change the SWR as seen by the transmitter. This allows the transmitter to produce maximum power. Thank you for viewing W9JUG.
Well, thank you, Jim. Well done video. Worth the million words, definitely. Something nice for some of our younger hams that are just starting out to think about. That's it for this Second Ham Nation video segment here in 2019. Hopefully we'll receive a few great videos from you that we can feature for the audience on February 27th. I was disappointed we didn't receive any Winter Field Day videos this year so far. I saw a great one on YouTube, but it had a full music track and no narration and very little wild sound. So we hope to see yours made for Ham Nation for the next video segment. If you participated in the Winter Field Day and you were out there shooting some video too, send it in to us. We'd be glad to get it on the air. Well, Keith, KR7RK promises a great road trip. Summit on the Air video for the next episode was shot by his son Jason, who's a college student. And the first version we watched on YouTube was great, but it was almost all music and no narration. So Jason's reworking it for Ham Nation as we speak. He's been loaded down with homework for college, but he is hoping to get it on for our segment on the 27th. He had some beautiful video on the original we watched earlier. Remember, we're dependent on you, the Ham Nation viewer, to send your shack photos and your videos to us. If you have questions about producing a video, we'd be glad to help. Just send an email to us at hamnationvideos@twit.tv. Send your links and your photos to the same place. Well, that's it. Time now to visit our Ham Nation studio out in Canyon City and see what's happening in the chat room. Good afternoon or good evening, Amanda. Welcome aboard.
Good evening, Dale. Nice to see you tonight. Thanks for those videos. I have quite a bit, actually, a lot of questions for Charlie. First, I need to thank Ian K. Oh, excuse me. It's not a K. G3ZHI for visiting us on our Fun Machine repeater system today. He joined over one of the various nodes that we have to offer from. I don't know if it was IRLP or D-Star or whatnot, but thanks for joining, and Jeff enjoyed the conversation today. All right, so let's move on. Charlie in 9JA said he wanted to shout out hi to you tonight from Florida and at Hamcation. And with that, he also had a question for you. He says, how was your support for the Carolinas 2 weeks before Hurricane Michael?
It was on par, but the destruction and the issues that we had for Hurricane Michael here were completely, completely different than they were in the Carolinas. The Carolina was mainly a generator, getting generators running and keeping transmitters on the air. Really wasn't a lot of damage to the transmission systems or the studios. It was mainly power and a little bit of flooding in the Carolinas, but we had all of the above and more during Michael. And Ray, I will see you tomorrow night.
Very good. Now, you had mentioned that you had, you're going to now install a monopole where you had your other tower. So I wanted to just ask my monopole climber here, Jeff, we have a monopole 90 feet here on Fremont Peak, which is about 7,500 feet tall. What do you think about monopoles?
Well, it's probably different than the one you guys are putting up, but this one is about 100 years old and I hate it.
that's his thoughts on it. Seriously, he has to do the climbing like this, and there's no steady balance, and it's pretty rough up there. But it sounds like this one's going to be much better for you guys.
This one will be much better, and it's going to be a beefy pole, like I said, to be able to handle the load that will be on it. And looking at around town at the towers that survived and didn't survive, every monopole survived. The antennas that were on the monopoles may not have survived, but every monopole that I know of survived without any problems.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's move on. So we have some other ones for you there. This was kind of interesting. I had quite a few people telling me to tell you, thank you for all of your hard work to get all of those stations back on the air and everything iHeartRadio did. So thank you very much. The other thing was WB5ORT. Ed, he asks, how was your ham experiences helping you come up with creative ideas to get all these radio stations back on the air?
I've been a ham since I was 12 years old, and just the whole, over the years, the education, field day, getting things to work, getting things to work, MacGyvering, I guess you would say, ham radio has been a big part of my career as far as being broadcast engineering. And I'm sure George would feel the same way about that as well. It's everything that I have experienced in ham radio, I applied during this hurricane. I can say that.
George?
I could say I've applied some of what I learned in ham radio, but I was a broadcaster a long time before I ever became a ham. I was late to the ham exams. I'll wait till they drop the code.
It doesn't matter. Like I said in chat room, one can help the other. So you might be a ham and your comms might not actually help during one of these emergency situations, but your knowledge of building and constructing might actually help out to get something else working so that they can get some comms up and running. So I think they go hand in hand big time. The other question I had was from Brett in Wyoming, WY7BG said, were you also involved in search and rescue or relief efforts during Hurricane Michael?
I was not. But the local hams here, this was such a catastrophic situation that even the local hams couldn't handle the emergency communications. Hams from out of the area came in and operated at the EOC, operated at the Red Cross shelters that were set up, because the hams here locally were just completely overwhelmed and had their own problems and weren't really set up to handle a catastrophe of this type. I did help out one of the American Red Cross shelters in Gulf County. They needed some coax, and I had some in my truck, and I just happened to be at the Gulf County EOC whenever they made a comment about it, and I said, "Well, I've got some in my truck," and they said, "Well, we need it up at the shelter in a place called Wewahitchka." And so I took, it was on my way back, so it was like, 30 seconds off the highway to get to this shelter. And I took that. And then I also gave them a roll of RG6 coax, which you wouldn't say, well, what would that be used for? They used it to make a stinger to go on the end of a mobile antenna to make an antenna longer. So they could get out better on 75 meters on one of the emergency nets they had on 75 meters. So
okay.
That was, that what little bit I helped was all coax.
Well, you know what? Everything counts. So that was helping, actually. The other question I had was from Ed. Again, he said, how long did you use the inverted L, or are they still using it?
Still using it. We'll be using that for probably several months, because regardless of how we decide to go with the rebuild of the station, we've got to keep it on the air. The FCC requires it to be on the air, so we'll be using it for quite a while.
All right. And this one is just ham related. This is not anything about what you did during Hurricane Michael, but you kind of have a cool shack. So why don't you tell us what's behind you there?
Well, let's see. I'll have to move out of the way here a little bit. I've got a Alpha amplifier. I've got a ICOM 7800 transceiver. I've got a Henry amplifier down there that I no longer use since I got the Alpha. And I've got the Microham micro key or two for, I'm a contester, so I use that to integrate into my contesting software to operate there. I'm going to be operating at the end of the month in the ARRL contest, the DX contest. I'm going to Croatia. I go there all the time, and I'm going to be operating at 9A1A, the big contest station there in Croatia, for the ARRL sideband coming up in a couple of weeks.
Well, very good. I might talk to you then. I have 9A1A in my logs a ton of times, and I bet a lot of you guys on the chat room do as well. So, Charlie, thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. And looks like you had a few awards back there on the wall as well. So have fun later on this month, and let me go over a couple of nets, and we'll send it back to George there. Let's see. We've got the 40-meter net. It's going to be around 7192. You know where to find it. Unfortunately, Steve W7UDI was on a call tonight, so the 75 meter is a no-go. And we have TAC 311 for the DMR net and 14 Charlie for the D-Star net. Other than that, that's all I have. George, back to you.
Okay, thanks, Amanda. And wow, thanks, Charlie, for being with us tonight and kind of sharing part of what's been going on down there. And Dale, thank you for more viewer videos. And wow, it has been an interesting show tonight. I'll put it that way. Charlie, good luck on the recovery down there. And
thank you.
Good luck in the contest.
Yeah, as they say, good luck in the contest.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting on. I haven't been on the air since October, so it's going to be fun to be in a 48-hour contest from Croatia.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you're over there all the time. Is that like, do you have family connections over there, friends, or just by accident, they want the best contester in the world?
No, it's not the best contester in the world by any means. But in the early 90s, I was a contractor for the U.S. State Department. Right after the fall of communism, I built radio stations in Eastern Europe. In Czechoslovakia, it was then called Czechoslovakia, and then I also built one in Croatia, and I got to know the hams at 9A1A when I was there, because believe it or not, the main guys at 9A1A were broadcasters. They were broadcast engineers, and in fact, Nixia 9A5W was at that time the head of the engineering for all of Croatian radio and TV, and I went over there and operated one time, and then went back another time in 95. And then they said, anytime you want to come, just come on. And so I've been going over there since 95, every other year at least, and then some years twice a year. And I was just there in July when I was at the WRTC in Germany. I was a referee there, and my wife and I, we took a trip from Germany and rented a car and went down to Zagreb and stayed in Zagreb and saw everybody. And then we flew down to Dubrovnik, which is a very beautiful city. That's where they film Game of Thrones, and we were there, and then went back to Zagreb, and then went back to the States. But the people over there are wonderful. The beer is really good, and they know how to cook a hog.
Well, what more do you need? If you've got beer and good hog, you know, and ham radio, that's can't pretty much the full package.
Life is done after that. What else can you do? There's nothing. You're good.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight, everyone. And I don't know if Bob and Gordo will be back next week or not yet, but I know they'll be having a big time in Orlando this weekend. Before we go, any final words, Dale?
Not too much here. Just if you're driving here in the Midwest, watch out for that black ice. There were a number of accidents today in the Wichita area, and it looks like on the weather map tonight, the entire state is covered with ice, or it will be. So kind of dangerous out there, so drive carefully. It's cold, too, so dress warmly. It's only 22 here right now. So that's it. I hope to have a bunch of videos for you next time on the 27th, George. We'll hopefully see you then.
All right, Dale. Thanks for being here. Amanda, any final words from out west there?
I actually have two. First, I think Gordo is headed to Yuma after Hamcation, so I don't believe he'll be on. He'll still be traveling in his van mobile. Second, I am kind of just depressed about how many people in the chat room just said that they preferred cats over dogs. We'll talk about this later. Trust me.
Yeah,
Amanda, we have six cats.
Ah, see? I'm losing out again. One person on there had 11. Where's the dogs? Show me the dog love.
Yeah, we only ever had one cat. We still got plenty of dogs. But I taught the cat to give me five. I could put my hand out there and the cat would give me five. So really? Smartest cat I ever saw. Anyway, Charlie, thanks again for being here with us tonight. Any final words, any ham radio wisdom that you want to pass along?
The only thing I'll say is I'll see you if you're going to be in Orlando. I'll be there on Friday. I will be leaving after the contest dinner Friday night and driving back to the Florida Panhandle and arriving here about 1 o'clock in the morning to go hunting on Saturday morning.
Okay, so leave you alone on Saturday morning. You'll be in the woods.
That's right.
Sounds like a fun time. All right, thanks, everyone. We'll see you again next week. 7-3.
7-3.
7-3.